Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
As more of our children head back to their classrooms over the coming weeks, how best can we prepare them for the changed environment that they're facing, one that is really very vigilant about illnesses that could previously have gone unchecked? Well, I'm joined by Dr. Nina Burns to give us some advice. Good morning, Nina.
Morning, Claire.
You're very welcome. Now, they've been at home for so long and now we're sending them back out into the world. So we want them to be fighting fit. But you say it's not really about boosting immunity. It's more about improving the general health of the children.
Yeah. So, I mean, people talk a lot about immune systems and how we boost them. But really what we need to talk more about is just being as healthy as possible. Because if we are living as healthy a life as we can, and if we're doing things the way we should, then our immune system largely looks after itself. And it's when we're run down and challenged and maybe stressed or exhausted, you know, we know that those kind of things do certainly have an impact on our immunity. So I suppose from the point of view of kids being in school, we want them to be as healthy as they possibly can.
Yeah, and you see, the added complication now is that they get the sniffles and the, you know, the runny noses and the different little things a lot. Now, up to now, you could probably say, well, they're well enough to go in, but you can't do that anymore.
No, and it's funny. I was talking to some colleagues last week and, you know, we were kind of joking, almost saying medics were probably the worst for it. You know, pre-COVID, it was almost like a badge of honour to go to work or your kids to go to school, you know, because they were strong and they didn't succumb to their illness.
Mm-hmm. Like, but their really, leg has to be hanging off before you keep them at home. You're one
of
those.
My own kids used to, you know, their friends used to say, isn't it great your mum's a doctor? And I remember my daughter, and she's probably only about 12 or 13 when she said it, she said, they just don't get it, mum. Having a mum who's a doctor is terrible. You get no sympathy.
Yeah, you can't pretend that something is terribly wrong. Yeah.
But the whole thing is, though, now we realise how bizarre that was to think it was acceptable to maybe send the kids off to school.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
Snuffles and coughing. So I think really the most important thing I could say to any parent who wants their child to stay healthy in school is make sure your child is healthy going to school, because it is not okay to send your kids to school with sniffles or runny nose or cough or certainly fever. And if they have any number of symptoms, it's always worth a chat with the GP to see if they need a test. But even if they have a bit of the sniffles, they need to stay home a couple of days. But you can't just send them in and go, it's not COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you know, more and more when people call, what we're hearing is, well, no, I just have a sinus infection. I just need an antibiotic. It's not COVID. And they seem quite surprised when we say, well, actually, you need to have a COVID test.
Right. And and just in terms of trying to avoid the sniffles and and the little colds and things, do you recommend supplements?
Well, no. I suppose yes and no is the answer to that, Claire. I mean, in an ideal world, we should be getting everything we need from our diet, okay? So if we are eating a healthy diet, if we are getting regular exercise, etc., we shouldn't need to take supplements. But in reality, we know that lots of children are quite fussy eaters. You know, the evidence would suggest that a lot of toddlers and young children are deficient in iron. So what I would say is, you know, if your child's diet is not what it should be, if maybe they're running on empty a little bit, you know, taking a supplement from time to time can be an additive to diet. It's not a substitute for it. I think that's really important. What you eat and how you exercise are far more important. But certainly there are good vitamins out there. And, you know, just talk to your pharmacist or your doctor about it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, things containing iron, it is really important that you keep those well out of the reach of children, because, you know, unfortunately, an overdose of iron is very dangerous in children. So there are many vitamins that a young child might, you know, think are sweeties. And it's very important that they recognise that they are, in fact, medicine and not something just to take ad lib.
Yeah, so the jelly ones you're talking about there.
Well, the jelly ones actually rarely have iron in them, and that's something parents don't recognise as they buy the jelly. So jelly often are very good for vitamin D and maybe B vitamins and that, but actually you need to look a little bit harder to find vitamins with iron in them. And again, you should really talk to the pharmacist about that. You know, you can buy iron on its own. There are a few vitamins that have iron in them, but actually most of the jelly ones don't contain iron.
Okay, but they should be taking an iron supplement, but a carefully controlled dose. Would that be your advice?
If their diet is not what it should be, iron is one of the minerals that certainly young toddlers and young children are more commonly deficient in.
Now, sleep makes a huge difference, doesn't it? In lots of ways, but in maintaining health, it has a big impact.
Yeah, we all underestimate the power of a good night's sleep. You know, and I'd often said to patients who don't sleep well, is, you know, sleep deprivation is a form of torture. So in children particularly, a good night's sleep is important. And I suppose at every stage in life. You know, people focus a lot on teaching babies to sleep and getting a good night routine. And, you know, sleep is a gift you give your child from early on, because healthy sleep patterns formed in childhood will continue into adulthood. But having a good wind down time, having a relaxation time, having a routine around bedtime, and making sure your child gets enough sleep. And really, primary school children need 10 to 11 hours sleep. Secondary school children probably 9 hours sleep. So there are many, certainly secondary students, getting a lot less than that. So it is important.
Our experience of the return to school last week was that they were absolutely exhausted and probably needed a bit more.
Yeah, and they do. And when they're busier in the day, and, you know, they can get kind of grumpy when they're tired. And unfortunately, we all know, when we've had young children, when they get overtired, that nighttime going to bed can be an absolute battle, because when they're overtired, they almost resist sleep. So it's not just the going to bed, it's the time in the wind down before bed, making sure it's relaxing, making sure they have a little routine that in their brain they start to associate with going to bed. You know, and it's not always easy. I have a 7-year-old, and I joke with friends all the time, you know, he's grown up in a house where everyone is older than him. So he was never a 7 o'clock to bed child.
Okay.
But it's just about having a routine and making sure that they follow that, and that they know that this means bedtime is coming. And then they find it much easier to fall asleep.
Listen, the other thing I wanted to ask you about, Nina, was the vaccine rollout. How has it been going for you in your practice?
So I have to say, thankfully, in our practice, you know, we have managed now to vaccinate all our over 85s. As you know, obviously, Claire, we have two centres, we have Monkstown and Castleknock, and we vaccinated our Monkstown group last Tuesday. It was a bit nerve-wracking the end of the week in that we didn't know until late on Thursday whether our vaccines were coming on Friday and how many doses we are getting. And we had people booked in for Saturday. And, you know, certainly, I don't think people can quite understand how big it was to the over 85s when you ring them to book the vaccine. And, you know, I'm on Twitter, and a lot of people know, and, you know, a lot of people will comment and sort of think that maybe, you know, God, we're just talking too much about it. But I don't think anyone who has been involved with the over 85s, only those people realize how much it meant to them and how awful it was for some practices to have to ring them and say, I'm really sorry, the vaccine we promised you is not here. So, look, I know there are supply issues. I know that there have been problems around that. But I guess I was glad to see maybe a circular from the IMO and the ICGP this week that they're trying to improve communication, because running a practice and organising a fairly extensive vaccine clinic with less than 48 hours notice of how you had to do that just is not feasible in general practice. And I think they're hoping to improve that. Hopefully, you know, the consumables, that like the needles and syringes, ideally, if we could just get them delivered in a larger volume, because what happens is your vaccines come, the needles are supposed to arrive the day before, but in both cases with us, they arrived several hours later. And you're sitting there thinking, am I going to be able to give these vaccines?
Yeah, you were tweeting about that on Friday. Yeah. You were waiting for the hardware, as you call it, the syringes and the needles.
Yeah. Now, they have a very long shelf life, so there isn't any reason why they couldn't be delivered in bulk, unless there is a shortage of them. And I can completely understand if there is, but I just wish we'd be told that if there's a difficulty getting needles and syringes. Communicate that to us. But, you know, there are obviously, and I don't want to knock, there are people working very hard in the HSC, and it was very clear from the box that arrived, it was thought through, like there was cotton wool, there were masks, there were sharps boxes, there was everything you needed to give that small group of vaccinations. But I can't help but think at the cost magnifications, if every 2 weeks we're going to get another big bag of cotton wools and sharps buckets, that probably would have done us actually for all the over 70s.
Okay.
And I think logistically, maybe it could be tightened up a bit, but I don't want to knock the hard work. I know there are people working really hard.
And we take that, but it's important to highlight where things can improve.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Nina. Dr. Nina Burns, back after this.